Near the beginning of Parshat Vayechi, which is this week's parasha,
we have tomorrow is my last day for my father.
Okay.
Okay.
So, okay. Dovi, thank you. What? Who? In Shvat. My mother's Yahrzeit was this past Shabbat. But nonetheless, to be chabad to all of ours. We have Yael Yekutiel and Shirat Sur and Shir Chajaj and Erez Orbach, Hashem Yikom Damam, in the vicious, cowardly attack yesterday on our Chayalim. And we're also praying for Refuah Shlema for Aviv Bat in Anat. What?
Yeah, I get
also. Mm-hmm. So, Mirtz Hashem, our learning will be a source of nechama to the families and should always remind us of where our anchor is. That's actually a little bit, in a way, connected to what we're doing. I want to take a look at an entire chapter. We don't usually do that. It's a lot. And to do it, we're going to walk through this parak, which appears near the beginning of Parshat Vayechi. It's a very famous scene. And it's so famous that if you're ever playing Torah charades, all you have to do is this. You have to watch me do this, and immediately everybody knows. Menashe and Ephraim. That's all you have to do. It's so famous, and here's the problem that we encounter when we study famous pieces. When we study famous pieces, we often are so sure we know them that we miss how much we don't know them. It's easier to teach some obscure masechet or some obscure parsha than it is to teach Ashrei. Teaching Ashrei is very hard because everybody's so sure they know Ashrei, they don't realize how much they don't know it. So we're going to learn this parasha through. I'm going to ask some questions along the way. Some of the questions are on the back, some of the questions not on the back. And we'll see what we come up with. But this parasha, which seems like a very simple one because we learn it as kids and we are raised with it, when we look at it with a more discerning eye, we could see lots of difficulties. Okay. What happened just before this? Why am I asking that? Because the parsha starts, Vayihi acharei ha-divarim ha'ele, which means this is in some way a follow-up of whatever happened last. What happened last is that Yaakov called Yosef to his bedside, and he made Yosef take an oath to wit that he would not bury him in Mitzrayim, but he would rather bury him in Canaan. He will instead bury him in Canaan, in Marat HaMachpelah. And that's something that comes up later in the parasha when all the sons are around, but right now it's just with Yosef. Parenthetically, what does he make Yosef do with his hands as part of that process?
Put
his hands underneath Yaakov's thigh, or thighs. Why? Where else do we see that? We see that with Eved Avraham, whatever his name is. Eved Avraham putting his hands underneath Avraham's thighs when Avraham makes him take the oath not to have Yitzchak marry a local girl, correct? What do those two things have in common? So I'll help you out. Why doesn't Avraham go himself to get a wife for Yitzchak? This is a parenthesis, but a little fun. Why doesn't Avraham himself go to get a wife for Yitzchak? Because he's really old. He's really old, right? So he sends his younger servant, probably not Eliezer, probably somebody much younger, and he sends a younger slave to go, but Avraham is afraid that by the time this whole deal is done, he won't be alive. And therefore, he makes the Eved take an oath with the sternest symbolism. In the ancient Near East, we have other testimony from outside of Tanakh, when somebody put their hands underneath your body, it was a statement of total reliance. So you would have somebody take an oath and put them almost kind of, remember like boosting when you, as a kid, you used to climb a fence, you used to boost. I'm totally relying on you, totally trusting you, because I won't be here to see. So that's what Avram's concern is, but here it's clear, because Yaakov's saying to Yosef, when I'm dead, I want you to bury there. I'm not going to be around. So I'm trusting you in the next world already that you'll take care of this. Okay, so he takes that oath, and now, moving further on, so after all of that, which means, by the way, and this is where we get a little confused, because we start, in our Babylonian custom, we start the parsha with Vayechi. And therefore, the first little scene that we have is the one I just mentioned. And immediately, in the same Aliyah, or if it's Monday, Thursday, in the very next Aliyah, we have this piece. So we picture them as all happening together. But they're not happening together, because in the first scene, Yaakov was not sick. It just, he was old, and he called Yosef to his bedside. Here he's sick, and sick here means sick as in last time sick. I'm sick and I'm going to die. And interestingly enough, in Minhag Eretz Yisrael, as you know, we follow the Babylonian custom of Kriyat HaTorah taking a one-year cycle. What was the Minhag Eretz Yisrael? It was a three-and-a-half-year cycle, twice every 7 years, patterned after Hakel. And so they have a different division of the Parshiot. They obviously read very much less every week. They would start this Parsha here, not a few psukim earlier with Vayechi, but both here. So, in a sense, you got a better sense of a divide. Okay, what happens? Vayomer Yosef hinei avicha chola. So somebody told Yosef, your father's sick. Vayikach et shnei banav imot Menashe et Ephraim. Now, last time he didn't take Menashe and Ephraim. This time he takes Menashe and Ephraim to Yosef Yaakov's bedside. Interesting, we don't know why. Vayaged li Yaakov, vayomer hinei avinecha Yosef ba'elecha. All right, so somebody tells Yaakov, here comes Yosef, probably an official court announcer. Nobody's ever done a really good study, or at least I haven't seen one, on when he's called Yaakov, when he's called Yisrael, because throughout Tanakh they interchange, and nobody can make head or tail of when, like the rhyme or reason. But it is what it is. All right. What's the first thing Yaakov says to Yosef? This is where the parsha gets very weird. What's the first thing he says to him? El Shaddai Nirai Eli Beluz Be'eretz Kanan. God appeared to me in Luz. Where's Luz? Luz is what later becomes Beitel. Yaakov went and could not get inside the town of Luz, slept outside on a rock, and in the morning renamed that part Beitel. All right. When did God appear to Yaakov in Beitel? He appeared to Yaakov in Beitel three times. He appeared the first time, which is the famous Sulam scene. He appeared again when Yaakov was returning from after the massacre in Shechem and coming back south on his way to Hebron, stopped in Beitel. And a third time at that same visit in Beitel. God appears to him twice. In the first visit, in the first vision, God tells him that I'm giving you this land. And in the second vision, he promises him something else we're going to take a look at here. Okay? So he says, God appeared to me in Luz, Be'eretz Kanan, vayivarech oti, and he blessed me. All right, so again, we don't know yet which vision this is. We'll see. Vayomer Eli, this is what he said. Now, Yaakov's now quoting what God said to him. Hineni mafrecha v'hir biticha. I'm going to make you fruitful and multiply you. Unetaticha likahal amim. What does that mean? I'm going to make you a kahal amim. What does that mean?
Basically, better than the others.
Well, what does kahal amim mean? What does the words mean? These are God's words, so everyone... A group of what?
Nations.
Kahal Amin, United Nations. Law
Alina. I'll make you a nation.
Group of nations.
I'll make you as a nation.
I'll make you what?
As a nation.
Oh, I thought you said donation, sorry.
As a nation.
I make you a nation? That would be Am. What's Kahal Amin?
Yeah, Kahal Amin will maybe to
come. Okay, good. So the answer is you're right. We don't know. We don't know. Okay, we don't know what it is. And by the way, he's not quoting God exactly. You're going to see this Parshanut here.
Right? Kahal Amin. So the Amin.
Kahal Amin means a Kahal of Amin. What is a Kahal of Amin? What does it mean? I mean, the United States is kind of a good example.
Many Amin Kahal.
Good, so.
You're going to be one of the Amin. So, in other words, you're going to be.
No, that's not a Kahal Amin. That would be even a Tatich al Am. What is the Kahal Amin?
Kahal means many.
Right. I know it's not that. I don't know what it is, but I know it's not that. I know that it's a group of nations, but I don't know what the means. Right? But what we're also going to discover here,
maybe all the tribes,
is that Yaakov is not quoting God exactly, and that's important to see. We'll take a look at the original. All right. Now, by the way, he said in the name of Chavir Biticha. When did God say that? On which time? Was it on Yaakov's time out or on Yaakov's time back? We will discover that it's on Yaakov's time back. When Yaakov came back, how many kids did he have? When he got to Beit El on the way back. 12. Everybody forgets Dina. He had 12 kids, 11 boys and a girl. Subsequently, he was going to have one child. So how can God say, Hinanima frecha v'hirbiticha, when all he's going to have is one more kid. Okay? When a taticha likalanim, again, we don't know what that is. When a taticha taras is otlas, acha acharecha huzat ulam. And the other very famous promise that appears to Bereishit, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all get this promise, and that is the land, kids and the land, very famous. Why? How are these two tied together? We have to see. Ve'ata, and now, Yaakov recalls this piece of history. It's the first thing he says to Yosef. Doesn't say, how you doing, Yosef? Boker Tov, Shalom Alech, anything. First thing he says is, El Shaddai Nirai, Beluz Beretz Kanan, Vayivarachotim, Vayomarai, etc., and repeats this bracha. Then, Ve'ata. Now, what's Ve'ata mean?
No.
And where does Ve'ata appear in Tanakh? Only in dialogue. It's never part of narrative. It's part of dialogue. Whenever somebody says, X, Y, and Z happened, Ve'ata, we have to do this. Or, the God has done all this for us, Ve'ata, we have to do this for God. Ve'ata is always an effect, cause and effect. Okay? So, Ve'ata, what does this have to do with anything? Shnei v'necha ha'noladim l'cha b'eretz Yitzrayim ha'boi lecha mitzrayim alihem. Now, this is the more critical piece of the story, more than the hand cross. And that is, Yaakov tells Yosef, your two sons are mine. What does that mean? Ephraim u'mnashe ki uven m'shimon yuli. So he knows Ephraim and Manasseh are, calls them by name, and he says, Ephraim and Manasseh are now like Reuben and Shimon. What does that mean, they're like Reuben and Shimon?
They're like his favorite?
My own kids.
My own kids. What's the impact of that?
Not Joseph.
Which means what? You can't make somebody not the father.
You're not qualified.
So what does it mean?
They get Eretz Yisrael.
So the traditional understanding is that Yaakov wants to make Yosef into his Bechor. And making Yosef into the Bechor means giving him a double portion. So he gives him a double portion by taking Yosef and splitting him into two. You've got two sons. Each one now becomes a son of mine. And therefore, now your family has really got the double portion. Very nice, right? And by the way, that's exactly what it says in Divrei Hayamim, Aleph, Perakei, Pasuk Aleph, Reuven Bechor Yisrael, Uvachalo Yitzoe Aviv, when he defiled his father's bed, Nitna Bechorato Livnei Yosef. The Bechor was given to Bnei Yosef, and that looks exactly what's happening here. Makes sense. But it gets weird. All right? Umbolatcha sholata acharem l'chayiyu. By the way, this sounds like Yosef had more kids. In other words, he had Manasseh and Ephraim, and then he had other kids. And they belong to you, but not exactly. Meaning, there are no Bnei Yosef, because Hashem Achem Yikaru B'nachalatam. So they'll either be called Manasseh or Ephraim. Meaning, it sounds like Yosef, let's say, has six kids. So he's got Ephraim and Manasseh, and two others are Ephraim's kids, and two others are Manasseh's kids. Which is really weird. So if you look, you don't have to crack too hard in the behind the surface to see that some very serious problems in this parsha. What's going on? And now va'ani bevoi mipadan meita alai Rachel be'eretz Kanan baderech. What is this doing here? Why is he mentioning this? Yaakov is not giving his whole life story. He skipped a lot of important parts. Why is he mentioning the death of Rachel? However far that is, wherever that location is, now some read this as an apology, sort of, which is, I'm asking you to take me all the way back to Hebron, and I wasn't willing to schlep your mom a few miles to Hebron to bury her there. I buried her by Derech. The only problem with that is what I mentioned earlier is that there's no mention of his request to be buried in Hebron here. That's in a different parsha. So it's not like he's saying here, bury me in Hebron, but I didn't bury your mother. I'm sorry. You know, this seems to be coming out of nowhere. And that's the end of that. He mentions Rachel's death. Boom. Now this, by the way, is very strange. What did he just mention? Menashe and Ephraim, Kiruvim Shimon Liyuli, which means he knows them by name. Now he turns around and he says to Yosef, who are these guys? So a teacher of mine, Rav Elchanan Samet, suggested that what we have here is what's called the Sipur Mefutzal, meaning that there are two parts of a story that happen at two different times, and the Torah put them together. This does happen in Tanakh. And that part of this story actually happened 17 years earlier, when Yaakov first arrived, and he sees Yosef with these two little kids, yeah. And he says, Mi'ela, and he introduces him. And it weaves it together. I'm presenting things a little differently. Watch what he answers, and I'll explain what I think Mi'ela here is. Vayimosef alavi banayim ashenatam li'elim bazeh, so he says, bring them close so I can give them a bracha. Now, I think that this is all happening in one scene. I think this is Yaakov on his deathbed, and Yosef is standing there with Menashe and Ephraim, who are now in their 20s, right? Because it's 17 years later, and they were little kids, so they're in their mid-20s. And he brings them close. Why does he say Mi'ela? So I want you to think about the scene. What?
Couldn't see either.
Yes, but okay, could be Mi'ela as part of the not seeing. I think there may be something else going on here in this particular case. What scenes do you know of fathers giving brachot to their kids? What's the most famous one? What? Yitzchak. Right. What happens before Yitzchak actually gives Yaakov the bracha that's intended for Esau? What happens? He keeps saying to him, who are you? Who are you? Right? Right? There's constantly a mentioning of his name. A part of that is because of the discomfort, the confusion. Who is this guy really? But it's not the only place. I want you to think about the scene between Yaakov and the Malach in the middle of the night, the wrestling match. All right, what happens at the end when the Malach says, I got to go? Yaakov says, I'm not going to let you go, King Berachtan, you got to bless me. What's this? What's the first thing he says? Mashmecha. Right? Vayomer Elav Mashmecha, Vayomer Yaakov. And then he says, Vayomer Elav Yaakov Yameh Ot Shimcha. And then what does Yaakov ask him? What's your name? He says, Lamazet Shalish Shmi, right? Okay, good. All right, okay. So notice, every time before giving up bracha, what happens? There's a statement of the name. When God blesses Avram, what does he do? Lo yikar shimcha Avram kim Avraham. Avram, what is that? Right? Sarai not. Before the name, before the bracha, there's the invocation of the name. And I think that's part of the protocol that happens here, is that every time somebody's going to give a bracha, there's like a statement of the name. So Yaakov knows who they are, but he says, Mi'ela. Like, you got to make a statement. Banayim. Okay, good. So the answer is, who are they? Then I'm going to actually find their banai. That's the critical piece. Good. Kachem ne'lai, Rav Rachem. Bring them close, and I'll give them a bracha. Okay, very good. So, we still don't know why he's going to give them a bracha, or what it's about. V'nei Yisrael kavedu mizoken lo yuchal lirot. So his eyes are heavy. He's old. He can't see. So this, by the way, reminds us totally of the Yitzchak scene, of embracing and connecting through touch. Yisrael Yosef, ro'ofanecha lo filalti. This is a little play on words because he's blind and he says, ro'ofanecha lo filalti. I didn't even hope to see your face all the time. Now I see your kids. Not really see, but right. So what me'im berkav doesn't mean, if Samet says on their knees, which makes it has to be younger. Now close to him, he moves them out. And Yosef bows to Yaakov. Now Yosef takes them both. And now he returns them back to where they were, but he orders them because he knows that Yaakov is now about to give him a bracha. So he puts Menashe on his left side, which is Yaakov's right, and vice versa, so that Yaakov will put his hands out, and the right hand will be on Menashe, which he deserves, because he's the Bechor, right? He does the famous hand switch. All right. By the way, who's he blessing here? We think so, but what does it say? Vayivarech et Yosef. Strange. He's blessing Yosef.
Well, they are his children, so
still.
Right. Okay.
Indirectly.
Vayomer. What does he say? Vayomar. Ha Elohim asher etachu al tal lefanav Avraham v'Yitzchak. Now he suddenly invokes Avraham and Yitzchak. God, before whom my grandfather and father walked, meaning we're loyal to, ha Elohim ha ro'e oti, God who has shepherded me, who has sustained me. But he's bringing up the Yah, mi'odi arei omazeh, since I was born till now. Hamalach ha-goel oti mikorai yivarech et ha-narim. Who's ha-narim? Menashe, right? What does that mean? My name and Avram and Yitzchak's name should be called on them.
They were going to continue the...
Yeah, so why only these guys? Why doesn't he do that in the next scene with Reuven's kids and Shimon's kids?
Because they became like
They became like what? Yeah, good. So now we're going to do that. You're on the right... Absolutely. Yosef, of course, is not happy with the switch. He tries to move the hand. He says, no, this is the Bechor, put your right hand there. Yaakov says, Echves mein Zun, because we know, of course, Yaakov, they all spoke Yiddish. But I know that, right, I'm kidding. I know that Gamhu Yela Am Gamhu Yigdal. What is Gamhu Yela Am Gamhu Yigdal? What does that have to do with anything? What is it that Yaakov has done? What is it Yosef's unhappy about? And what's Yaakov's defense? Yaakov favored the right hand on Ephraim. Yosef didn't like it because Menashe is the Bechor.
Don't worry about it. He'll be okay.
So and so he say, Gamhu Yela Am Gamhu Yigdal. What does that mean?
You can also flourish with the, you know, and
you're saying
the Bechor goes
to one, not the other.
Yeah, but Gamhu Yela Am. What does La'am mean?
Nation.
I understand. Aren't they part of Bnei Yisrael? What do you mean nation?
Shevet.
Well, then call say Shevet.
Isn't Kahal Hamim?
Now, let's see. This is really weird. What does that mean? Zaro yemlo agoyim.
His descendants?
Now they translated, his seed shall become a multitude of nations. Horse hockey, it doesn't mean that.
No.
What does the phrase mean? Zaro, his children, yemlo agoyim. What does that mean?
Fill up the
gun. Great, we don't know. We're all agreed that we don't know what it means. Maloha goyim. I don't know. Multitude of nations, it's not.
We understand the meaning.
Really? I don't. Please explain it to me.
So, my understanding is that his son is also going to be a shepherd, and he's going to be a big, not nation, but a part of Israel. So it's going to be a
what does Maloha goyim mean?
Maloha
goyim.
Maloha goyim means.
Yeah?
Goyim is a me, it's am. All over the world,
so the bracha is Golos. Whoops.
That's what it is.
Gee, wow.
Reality.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. And it's not the reality. Ephraim never went into Galut. Ephraim just got decimated. Right? You want to say about Yehuda? Maybe. Maybe. All right. Now, who does he bless? Vayivarchem. Who's he blessing?
A God.
Vayivarchem.
The children.
Vayivarchem.
The children.
The plural.
Yeah.
What did it say beforehand?
Yosef.
Vayivarchem Yosef. Now it's Vayivarchem. He blesses them. And what's the bracha? Becha yivarech Yisrael emor. Who's bracha? Yosef. Which is it? And the idea is that this is what Yisrael, the Jewish people will say, this is the oldest family custom that we have that we still keep. Right here in Bereishit. You see, this is how you're supposed to bless your kids. Tell your kids.
No. What?
In the
wedding, the Rivka custom.
Yeah.
When he takes the veil.
The veil, but there's no veil in Tanakh. That's with Rivka.
That's what I said. That's even older.
Oh, that one.
That's
the question is,
one.
What was that? Was that a wedding? There was no wedding there.
That's where he sources
it. Maybe, but this is explicit. Says Vayivar, right? Right. So you could also say to have a father-in-law who you can't trust. It's also an old minute, right? But that's also, you know.
We should announce the names of the children before the lesson, too, it sounds like you just told.
Yeah, the whole thing is just really.
It sounds like, according to what you said, just don't bless it, but say their names before we bless them.
Right, and he did say here, Simcha Levim Kefar Mechim. Oh, he said we should. So that's what I do.
You do?
You call an individual and you say the name.
And I have a bracha for each one based on Psukim. Sure.
What do you mean?
Well, you've been to our house Friday night.
Yeah, you're supposed to. What do you mean?
What? Each one of my kids has his own bracha. No, his own bracha. Besides this.
Of course, I do whatever in my
No, I do Psukim with the have their name in it.
My own Psukim.
I have that too. That's in my heart. But yeah, you have your own Psukim. Good. Okay, the newest testament, Toby. Okay, good.
We have a galut here.
Good. Okay, I don't know what you want to do with this. Okay.
Bye. Record it. I told you don't record it.
You choose
right. Okay, good. Good. I got a big laugh this week because somebody gave, they call it kiddush, I don't know why. Somebody gave some kibbutz one morning because of our yard site and they had some cheese. Said, oh, great, you know, I was like, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, and I wanted to start a club called Jews for Cheeses. The guy loves it. He thought it was great. So we wanted to start a
Chol of Yisrael
company called, you know, Jesus of Nazareth. It'd be great. Okay. Anyhow. Okay. That's a cheese whiz was. Okay. And then Vayasim at the family friend Hashem. What's Vayasim? Who? Who Vayasim? Well, just said that. Why repeat it? Anybody can read Ephraim Menashe. Why do you have to say Vayasim at the family Menashe? What's that about? You understand there's almost every pasuk here has
questions
and problems and like cracks in the surface. And it's only because it's a story that's so well known that we ignore the cracks because we think we know it. And then out of nowhere, Vayom Yisrael Yosef Inen Ochimet. Okay, well that fits here because, right? Vayalim Achem Yeshivatchem Al Eretz Avotechem. What does that have to do with anything? Everything here is about blessing the kids, adopting the kids. Yeah. You know who's going to be the most important kid? And then suddenly out of nowhere, he says, "Oh, and by the way, I'm going to die, and God's going to take you back home." Nice. Vani, which we had before, Vani b'voim padan. Vani, natati lecha shchem achar alachacha. I've given you an extra shchem, which some Rishonim read as being the city of Shchem, which works very well for Yosef. And the other is Shchem being a portion, like a shechem, right? And that's how Unklus, for instance, chulak chad, right? Asher alkachti mi'adam rubi chabib kashti, that I took from the Amori, and chabib kashti. Midrash says this is Yaakov now telling us that he actually participated in the massacre of Shechem. That he wasn't a bystander. Okay. Very weird parsha. I have some of the questions that we asked on the back. I think the answer to this entire thing starts at the beginning of the parsha. The beginning of the parsha, Yosef comes, and the first thing Yaakov says is, El Shaddai Nirai Lai Beluz Be'eretz Kanan, Vayivarachoti. That's the first thing he says. Let's look at that bracha. Turn the page and take a look at source 2. And you will notice what it is that Hashem says to Yaakov. This is the last time he appears to him in Beit El. He appeared in Beit El the first time with the Sulam, and he promised him three things. In very general terms, lots of kids, the land, and protection. He comes back, and Yaakov builds him his Mizbeach, and he says, I'm giving you the land. And then he appears to him again, Vayera Elohim El Yaakov Od, Bivomi Padan Aram. Now notice, Bevo'omi Padan Aram, which now takes us back to Yaakov saying, Vani Bevo'omi Padan Meital Rachel. Okay, so the whole idea is, it's all part of leaving Padan Aram. Vayom Elohim Shimcha Yaakov, Lo Yikare Shimcha Od Yaakov, Kim Yisrael Yashmecha, Vayikrat Shmo Yisrael. Now, we already knew about this from the Malach. But the Malach only told him, your name will become changed, here's the official name change, very nice. But why is he doing this here? Because look at the next pasuk. Vayomer Elohim, Ani El Shaddai, pray ureve. Become fruitful and multiply. So you now understand why is he mentioning your name was Yaakov, now it's Israel? Because he's invoking his name before bracha, like we've seen. Pray ureve, goy ukahal goyim ihiyamimaka. What does that mean? Goy ukahal goyim. What's a goy?
Nation.
What's kahal goyim? A group of nations. But Yaakov didn't say it that way. So for a minute, let's look at the next few words and we'll go back. Umalachim echalatzacha yetzeu, kings will yet come from your loins. Who's coming from Yaakov's loins?
That's why.
Binyamin. That's the only one left. Right. Which is why Shaul is from Binyamin. The first king actually is from Binyamin. Sure.
But his grandkids still.
What?
He means his grandkids.
Really?
Not.
Because mechalatzecha means from your loins.
The kids and their grandkids and their great-grandkids, it's all mechalatzecha.
It could be, but Yetzeyu is the problem. The way we read Yetzeyu is they're going to come out.
What about Yehuda?
So Yehuda's afterwards. What does Loyasu Shem Yehuda mean? So the Ramban says, everybody's got a different take on it. Loyasu Shem Yehuda, the Ramban says, means once Yehuda gets the kingdom, it never leaves them. But it doesn't mean they're supposed to be first. Right? Lo yasur means once they have it, it won't leave them. So now, Hashem says to him, Goy ukahal goyim yamimaka. But what did Yaakov report to Yosef? He changed the language. Natatiha likahal amim. He changed that. And that change is critical for what we're doing here. It's vital for what we're doing here. And then he promises in the land. What does one have to do with the other? The Taticha L'Kahal Goyim, and he turns it to the Kalamim. Kalamim is how Yaakov understands the Kal Goyim. What does Kalamim mean? Okay. What does the word goy mean? Goy is a nation. Not am, it's a nation.
Nation.
It means it has some sort of a national identity. Okay. Which, by the way, the goyim can easily be describing the different shvatim. However, what's an am? This may surprise you because this is another one of the victims of words that we use so commonly in Ivrit that we don't realize that in Tanakh it means something different. For instance, like it's an example. You read in Tanakh and you get to the word tzaddik. We all know what a tzaddik is because we all know lots of them. Looking around the table, a bunch of tzaddikim. Right? What's a tzaddik?
Righteous.
Righteous person. Right? I have to tell you a story about that. A righteous person. Right? So you read tzaddik and you suddenly think it means righteous. And you read Tanakh and suddenly you meet all sorts of people who are nowhere near that. They're called tzaddik. And you suddenly realize in Tanakh it doesn't mean righteous. What does it mean in Tanakh? It means innocent. Vitzdiku etat tzaddik. Hargula ish tzaddik al mitato. Left and right, you find it throughout. Tzaddik doesn't mean a righteous person. At least certainly not in early Tanakh. Doesn't mean righteous person. Later and towards the end of the period of Tanakh and in Rabbinic Hebrew, the meaning shifts. And we have lots of words whose meaning shifts. What does the word ratzon mean in Chumash?
Well,
not in Chumash. Ratzon means favor. You bring a korban l'ratzon. What does ratzon mean in the later Tanakh? It means will.
Will, yeah.
That's different, but that's a different meaning. Mm-hmm. Meanings shift. They sort of slide. Meanings slide in language. They don't change. They slowly shift over to something that's related. Right, tzaddik is never a bad person, and tzaddik is never an animal. It's a description of a person that's good, but what's the nature of the good shifts, as an example. The word am, which we use all the time to describe the word, to use the nation, and a word that's become extremely popular in the last 100 years, thank God, because as we've reconstituted ourselves, and b'chaste shamayim have a beautiful medina,
Am Yisrael.
But am doesn't mean that in Tanakh. What does am mean in Tanakh? Almost always, it means an army. Take a look and you will see it means an army. Right?
Well, Am Yisrael has a good army.
True. But that's not how we mean it.
I know.
Right? Right. But Am Hatzava, and you find it especially through Chumash all the way through Sefer Malachim, through Sefer Shmuel. Right? Consistently. And you'll find that Am always means some sort of an army. Ha'am Asherito Shesh Meotish. There's lots of examples. All right. Now, what did Hashem say to Yaakov in Betel? I'm going to make you a Kahal Goyim, which evidently Yaakov interpreted as a Kahal Amim. What's a Kahal Amim? It means a group of armies. What did God say after that in Betel? And I'm going to give you the land. So what does Yaakov understand? In order to successfully conquer the land, I need a Kahal Amim. Right?
Armies, yeah.
Right. Now, can you have two armies that are from different backgrounds and have different, let's say, cultural interests, where one of them is six times as big as the other one? It won't work, will it? What do you need to create in order to make sure that they both work? You need to create parity, balance. Okay, now here's Yaakov. What has Yaakov already decided about Reuven's role in the family? Reuven goes to the corner and sits with a dunce cap on. Not a dunce cap, a hasty hat. A hasty hat, right? We'll time out forever, right? What about Shimon and Levi? They're out. They get no land, right?
They're getting no land?
That's right.
Shimon?
That's right.
Why?
Because Shimon and Levi are dangerous. It's in this week's parasha. Shimon gets cities inside of Yehuda and Levi gets cities throughout, but they don't get land. They were punished because of Shechem. Right? Probably because of Shechem. Maybe because of Yosef, but they're punished. All right, so who's left? So we've got Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. They don't count at all. So who's left? Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun.
Dan, Asher.
Dan, they're gone. Dan, Asher, they're Bnei Ashvachot. They don't count. Right? You'll see. You got Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and then you've got Binyamin and Yosef, and that's not equal. So what did Hashem tell him? Kahal Amim, you need to have a group of armies. How do you do that?
Split Yosef
into two, and now you've got two armies who face each other. Please take a look at the map. This is the map of how we camped in the Midbar. to the right in the east is Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. To the left on the west is Ephraim and Asher and Binyamin. And by the way, who comes first? Ephraim. It's called Machane Ephraim. Why is it Machane Ephraim? Because Yaakov said, Gam hu yiyeh le'am v'gam hu yigdal. He will be the bigger army. And by the way, who is the general when we come in? Yehoshua, from what Shevet? Ephraim. So what is Yaakov doing? Yaakov is setting up the army. For what purpose? Why do we need an army? To conquer the land. Look back at what Hashem says. You're going to be a Kahal Goyim, and I'm giving you the land. What does Yaakov say to Yosef out of nowhere? Oh, and by the way, I'm going to die. And Hashem is taking over the land. Because everything I'm doing right now, with adopting Ephraim and Manasseh as being my own, with favoring Ephraim over Manasseh and making him the head of that camp, and saying, any other kids you have now become part of Ephraim and Manasseh, I've done for the express purpose of creating a Kahal Amim, because that's how you're going to conquer the land. When you have a parity between the two sides, then you'll be successful. The minute that you lose that parity, the minute that there's an overbalance on one side or the other, then there's going to be cultural encroachment or separation because they don't need you. And that, of course, later happens. Both those things happen later on in history. In the Midbar, it works this way. In the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, it works this way. And it all starts with Yaakov. So what Yaakov's doing on his deathbed in Mitzrayim is preparing for the conquest of Eretz Yisrael with his descendants and setting up his family so that, get this, Beit Leah, the ones who are still in leadership positions, are three, and Beit Rachel, the ones who are in leadership positions, are three. And now, with that parity, there's an army that can actually go and conquer, and therefore the mention of the land isn't here. There's a lot more questions to deal with, but it's already 1:35.